Hey, friends, and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and this is episode number 107. Today's a special show for me because I get to enjoy an organic life and fitness-oriented conversation with my friend and colleague, Ruth Kack. Ruth's here with me today. So, Ruth, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on.
John, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to doing this for a long time, and I enjoy your podcast, and I enjoy you, as you know.
Well, we go back, I think, a couple of decades.
For sure.
Which gives us probably much depth to pull from in coming up with our conversation.
I think that's true. I met you, it's been more than 20 years ago at the Downtown Ridge when you were doing physical therapy.
And I'm a better person for having you in my life, so thank you very much. And this is a special show in many ways because it's entirely unscripted. Not that these shows are very scripted. Any regular listener will recognize that. But what I thought we'd do is we kind of just open up a discussion and freeform it on really any topic that either of us think is pertinent to the audience and the mission of achieving peak performance at any age and maintaining health and fitness and longevity and so forth. And I know you have a lot of experience, a vast breadth of experience in both life and working in the fitness industry.
Well, I don't know how true any of that is, but I have been a group fitness instructor for more than 20 years, and wellness has been important to me for at least that long, if not longer. I wouldn't call myself an athlete. I have been fit for a long time, and then a few years ago, on October 7th, 2017, I decided I wanted to start climbing, which is a weird thing to do when you're 50 years old, but I did decide that. And I found that I had enough fitness that I could go do it, not at a great level, but just heading to Spire to climb and then heading outside. And I, at that time, had a great epiphany about fitness and how you have been talking about it on the podcast. Your lifestyle, your eating, your rest, all of those things will combine and let you live this life that you are able to do the things that you want to do kind of out of the gate. And I found that to be true for myself. So I teach group fitness classes. I do resistance training a few times a week. I probably do cardio a few times a week. I work a sort of active job just a few days a week, and I have a family, and I just sort of hang out.
Well, I'd say that's very athletic, if you allow me to say that. And I think one of the things that you hit on there is you're having this rich enjoyment of life because you are fit and capable and athletic, and you can do and enjoy these things like climbing and like, doing things with your family, and that list gets fairly long. So one of the messages that I try to put out in the show, and I think that maybe we can talk about today because I know you embody this, is that everyone deserves that. Everyone deserves to be athletic and vital and enjoying their life as opposed to really what the alternative is, which is to be sedentary and stiff, slow, weak, fragile, ill, propped up by interventions, and ultimately having an early and not so good demise. I think I just painted a very dark picture there. So
I hear you though.
But the brightness that is in your face right now, and also you're beaming out this ray of wellness, if you like. I think that's really what I'd like to see more people having.
I agree. And I've never been a personal trainer. I stay in the group fitness realm. Part of why I love it there is I get to encourage people, not one-on-one, but as a group. And one-on-one if they want to speak after class or before class. We have people that come to class who have never worked out, they've never exercised in their life, and they move from the very back of the room to the very front of the room. We've had some of those people become group fitness instructors. It is such a great thing to see how that, you know, the two aspects of being fit and then also being healthy, where maybe they were healthy, but they were not fit. And now they have this in their life, this aspect of fitness where they walked into a room that it was unfamiliar to them. They felt not great about it. They move up, they're in it, and they're doing it. And it does make life so much better to have the energy and the ability to just live life how you want to live it. It's very important. And you said something about that everyone deserves fitness. I like that. I like the way you put that, because we do deserve it. We have to work for it. It doesn't just happen, but we all deserve it. And you want to give yourself a present, give yourself that. The gift of fitness is a wonderful gift, and you don't have to go to a gym. You can get outside and walk around, just march around your neighborhood and watch out for the ice. But you feel so good, and it's good for your mental health as well as your physical health. Yeah.
Humans are social beasts to varying degrees. When you talked about group fitness, you kind of lit up something in my mind, the tribe. Could you speak to that a bit more?
Yes. What I have found over the years is there are two definite groups of people. Some people are very self-motivated, and I admire those people so much. They'll go out, they'll get up early, they'll run, they'll work out on their own, and they don't need one bit of encouragement to do it. They're going to do it, and they don't need anybody to be there with them. On the other side of that coin, the exact opposite, are people like me who, if I were left to my own device, I would sit on the couch all the live long day and really not do anything. And I'm sure that it would be very bad. So for me, having that group mentality where you have all these people that are there for a common, whatever it is, even the weightlifting class that I teach, it's a weightlifting class, but we develop friendships with each other. There's something, I'm not a competitive person, but there's something about being in a group that will make me work harder than even if I'm if I have a personal trainer and there are two or four people in the group. I tend to work harder when I'm in a group fitness setting and there's a bigger group of people. The music can be motivating. I don't know what I find in the classes that I teach. Abby and I usually, my friend Abby and I usually team teach, and people in our classes, they encourage each other as well. They will put their weights down and go over to someone and say, "Oh, can I move this out of your way? You're going to slide off the whatever. You might fall if you step." It's one of those things that it heartens me. We tend to see the worst of people, I feel, with the with media, and in front of my face, I see this group mentality of we're all here. We all are different. We look different. We're different ages, different sizes, but we're here. We're going to do this together. I love group fitness. I love all kinds. My favorite probably kind of group fitness is dance. I'm not a dancer. I just love to go to those classes and feel like nobody's watching and I can just dance however I want. And I want everybody to feel that. I know it's not for everyone, but I think it's for a lot of people. And I feel always heartened when I see people coming in, trying it, enjoying it.
Yeah, you hit on a lot of things there. And obviously this whole idea of social accountability and I'm going to go to the group. People are expecting you to be there. They're counting on you. You know, you've got that support factor. And really, this whether it's group fitness or it's a club or a sports team, you know, that's that whole thing. Sure, we can train individually and independently, but we tend to upregulate a bit when we get together with other humans and we're working towards this mutual goal. Again, whether it's winning Super Bowl, like yesterday,
yes,
or for Kansas City, or you know, just having fun in a fitness environment. So I really like the idea of that kind of broad picture, broad scope. It's like, well, you know, group anything has its benefits, and everyone will derive a positive outcome from that to some degree. So going along that line, I would also offer up my view on competition is that competition can be framed in an appropriate manner, and it can be healthy and it can be fun. Kind of like you said, it's like, well, you know, sometimes it's okay to fight and define a winner and all of that. But a lot of times competition can take on this sort of kinder, gentler way that still in the end, we get more out of ourselves because we've kind of engaged with others. Is that, I didn't say that as well as I'd like to, but is that what you see in your groups?
Yes, I feel like you said that very well. The person who wants to come in first and it's going to train hard and achieve that goal may not be the kind of person that wants to be in a group fitness class, because the chance for individual achievement in a group fitness class is really zero. No one's going to get a prize at the end. Like, we all win at the end of the class. But the ability of using the environment of the group to make each person work to their best, or maybe even push themselves a little. I tend to be someone who gives safety cues all the time, gives options all the time, even when people probably don't need them, because I don't want people to get hurt. It's the environment for you. And we have a woman who has just started coming since the new year. She's been training in a small group setting at where I work, and she started to come to classes, and I would guess she's in her 70s. She loves it. So she's only been coming for a few, maybe 4 weeks or five, very consistent. Now she's coming early. She sets up, and we're finding from her this support with Abby and me, mm-hmm, and with the whole class. Here's this woman. She's just a regular woman, a beautiful, you know, a beautiful and vibrant woman. And she didn't really want to step inside. And we told her to get in and do it. And she did. And it's, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say that it's life-changing, because she is fit and healthy before she ever came into the room. But it has made her life better. And that's what I love about group fitness.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to talk about in the group fitness setting, and just in general for me, I try to encourage especially women to give themselves a break, especially when you're young and you've got little kids and you can't be consistent because somebody's always sick. You've got, one kid doing this sport, one kid's doing swimming. The little kid isn't even in school, and you just do your best. And that's, I try to be encouraging like that, because it's almost the worst time of your life when you're, and I'm not, small children, I'm not trying to be mean to you. It's just, as for moms and dads both, it's the toughest time of your life. It changes,
sure,
all your priorities change. And so, you know, in a group fitness arena, like, yeah, we expect you to be there. And when you're there, we're so happy to see you. And we, Abby and I for sure, don't ever give you a hard time. If you are there once a month, or we only see you once every 6 months, we're happy to see you and encourage you in whatever you can do.
Some cool thoughts there. You know, I think as we both have experienced that, you know, going through the lifespan, the journey, yeah, when your kids are little, that is your priority. And many times the absolute amount of time that's available for working out, it just becomes less. And so trying to meet yourself where you are, do what you can. I hear that positive message quite strongly. Roughly, what are the percentages of males versus females that you have in your clientele?
It's shifting finally. I would say there are 15% men, maybe 20. Abby teaches to sometimes more than 50% men, depending if she's doing cycling or a different format. And we are certified through an international fitness organization worldwide. In group fitness, males are 50% or a little more than 50% of participants. In the United States, that is not true. We are starting to see more men come to class. And part of it is we do have a few male instructors, group fitness instructors. And we, even though we goof off a little bit before class and are just, you know, talking to people and doing stuff, I don't feel like we exude some female, silly vibe where a man's like, I'm too manly to go in there. we're not marching around with our chest puffed out, like a Guido. Abby and I don't do that either. But we are seeing a shift for sure in the number of men who come to class. The age of our classes is varied a lot. And I will say, no, that's not true. There are some young men. There are. Mm-hmm. The most, I would say the majority of the men are 40 or over. So there's not a lot of, there are some 20 and 30 year old men that come to class. But it can be a hard sell. The classes that we're teaching also are manly. I would use that in air quotes, manly classes, like weightlifting. Sure. That's pretty manly.
Sure.
We don't see a lot of men in the dance classes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and I would say this, the reason I'm asking these questions is, across the journey in human performance that I've taken, my experience in group fitness is much less than yours. I've had an outdoor group that I've run every year for about 20 years. We're small numbers, sometimes there's a couple of groups, but that's really been the limit of my experience in group fitness as you've described it. I've had some other, work with sports teams and a lot of one-on-one work in terms of coaching, training, doing physical therapy with clients, all of that. But getting back to this, if we want to go back to sixth grade biology, boys and girls are different, right? And so we accept that in many ways. One of the things that I would ask you about is the way we do things and the messaging. There seems to be a bit of gender specificity with it. And I don't mean to say that we can't have different personalities and different people, but in general, guys will respond well to one type of a situation or feedback even, and females another. And I guess so my specific thing would be, like in some of my workout groups, you get the dudes and you kind of get in their face, talk shit to them a little bit, and that makes them want to do more, whereas I would not do that with most of my female clients because they may be find that off-putting or be upset. And so what's your take on that?
Yes, I could see how that is true. We can't shit talk where I teach your fitness because we're not supposed to cuss right into the microphone. Off mic, we 100% are cussing, but not really in people's faces, although there are a few people who would disagree and say that I shout, scream into their face while I'm teaching class. The words that we use, we try to use words like getting stronger, getting fitter, lean muscle. And from my age, 52 years old, when I started in fitness, when I was in high school, which I didn't do a lot of fitness, it was all about being so skinny and just skinny. Like it didn't have anything to do with building muscle or power or anything like that. It was working out to be anorexic, sort of.
Yep.
Not exactly, but sort of. And we try not to use words like skinny. We try to use words like healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get stronger, fitter. And so we don't really use different words for anybody in class. And we tend to stay in the front of the class and not go around to the class. So if we're saying something more than once, we tell people we are talking. If you hear us say something more than once, we're talking to you. Meaning you, the group, but also meaning you, the individual, so that you look in the mirror and see, oh, is my back rounded while I'm doing a deadlift? Oh, I need to put some tension between my shoulder blades and keep my spine long. Whatever it is, you will find it's interesting to hear you say you can get right in some men's face and just shout.
Yeah, and maybe not shouting and screaming too much, but just challenging.
Yeah. And I will say, I do, there are women who love that kind of stuff too. I personally, if you shouted in my, or not even shout, but if you did too much of that, for example, at workshops I've been to, fitness workshops, and they want to be pushing you to go a little faster or do a few more push-ups on your toes or whatever it is, if they get right down, even if they're not shouting, even if they're just saying encouraging words to me, I will shut down and I will literally walk out. I can't take it. I don't want you there. I'm doing my best. Like, just get away from me. I don't think most people are like that. Most people like a little bit of encouragement and challenge. But yeah, it is different. But we have the men who come, they don't need us to be different.
Right. Well, isn't that true that in anything you do which involves communication, the skill or the art form of being an instructor is, you know, trying to observe and listen and read people to be able to give them the message that's going to help them the most, that they can absorb and receive?
Yes. And we just like you, I'm sure, do this. We say it, we demonstrate it, we try to say it in a different way, and we want people to look at what they're doing and watch us as examples also. And hopefully something will get to them as far as their form and making sure they're doing things in the safest way that they can. We do refer people to personal training or even small group training with a personal trainer if we see people that we can't really, I mean, as a group fitness instructor, I don't have the education to tell you that you have a spine issue or a hip issue. In my head, I can think that, but I can't. I don't have the expertise to say that. So we will refer people that need extra help. Yeah, when we are cueing, we try to verbally cue with proprioception things. How does it, and then how does it make you emotionally? How does it make you feel? The tension that you feel when you're doing a move. Different things, because we all, yeah, like you said, we all learn a little differently. And if we can just find the way, and there always is a way, then it helps people execute in the best and most efficient way to get what they need out of what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking on a deep level, really talking about things like, encouraging people to be mindful and using some motivational interviewing techniques in your work with them, which is wonderful because, again, this is really how I think you've been so successful at inspiring people to get healthy, get fit, get consistent, which is really one of the goals that we are sharing. I'd like to get back into this, men and women issues, differences a bit, if you will. So you're a woman who's also had 40 years of experience in training in physical fitness and health pursuits. And you indicated that back in, let's say when you and I were, growing up a bit in the 70s and maybe, even into the 80s, fitness had some different perspectives than we have now. I think we've evolved and we have a much more healthy and scientific view of what fitness is. But could you almost do a play-by-play and say, well, okay, this, you know, you mentioned like the anorexic views early on, and I won't mention anyone's names who might be famous, you know, about that. But then, and how, what are maybe just a couple of highlights in where we're at now with respect to women's fitness?
Huh. Let's see, I could try. When I was in high school, it was a it was a thing to be skinny, of course. And I think that all women will experience that. Even now, people still have anorexia and body dysmorphic disorder and all of those things that go along with social media and seeing the perfect thing that is not even real. It's not real, but we think it is. When I was young, there was, I'm from a tiny area, a tiny school. There were 30 kids in my class that I went from first through 12th grade with. And there was one girl in particular who suffered from eating disorders. And she ended up dying 2 years after high school from complications of this. And she was so, she could have been probably a professional basketball player. I don't think there was a professional women's basketball player area back then. It's a little bit heartbreaking. So it went from that. When I was in college, I started lifting weights, and there were some bodybuilding things that I would see that I was attracted to. I never got into bodybuilding, but the way that you could change the shape of your body by building muscle was super enticing to me. And when Jeff Kack and I first were married, we lived in Seattle, and I was able to be at a gym with these women who were amazing. They were incredible. They were not crazy on the side of working out to be skinny and having leg weights on while they're doing aerobic classes and stuff like that. I mean, that was its own fitness thing. And we'll still see people at the gym today that will do weird stuff like that. I think it's weird because it seems so unsafe. Then when we moved to Bozeman, Jeff is from here, but when we moved back to Bozeman, I was able to find some friends who were into running. I had never been into running, and I'm not a runner. I do not enjoy it. I find it suffering and awful. But that was something new to me. And I ran a couple of the one half marathon at the Governor's Cup, and have done in some runs, not at all competitive at all. I know people can look up stuff like that. It's very sad. I was very slow running. I don't know. I get the trend. I feel that's happening now is definitely listening to how your body feels. So when you're in a class, if it hurts, you don't do it. You dial it back. You adjust it so that it feels challenging, but doesn't hurt you. I don't know if that's a trend, but I do think it is. I think the idea around changing up what you do and finding things you enjoy. So for example, I do not enjoy running. I never could really run fast enough. Well, that's not true. I never trained in a way where I was running fast enough to get a runner's high. So instead I just ran and hated every minute. And in my head, all I was thinking was, when will this be over? And how, if I run faster, will I be done sooner? Anyway, it just was not for me. But now we can do cycling, or we can do a dance class. We could do a sports, like sports inspired fitness class or workout. And resistance training. You can do strict resistance training in the weight room where you lift heavy for only a few repetitions, or you can do combination exercises where you're integrating different movement patterns at the same time. That leads to, in my opinion, healthier fitness and longevity. It allows you to, instead of getting up every morning and running. And then every week you run 100 miles, and if you don't run 100 miles, you're a loser. And that kind of thinking, I feel like it's kind of gone by the wayside. I know it's still out there, but if you want to be healthy, you do what feels good for you. I am personally a lazy person. So I don't want listeners to think that if you feel like you don't want to work out every day of the year, then you should not. That's not what I'm saying. You should be moving. You should be working out. But you find stuff that works, and also find people that you can do it with, because my group of friends that I have at the gym, they are my friends. They are the people who I want to go on vacation with, and that I want to day drink with. And I want to be with those people all the time. And we also have this thing, fitness, in common. So we challenge each other in different ways and find new things to do. And it's great. But for example, this year we are, I haven't gone yet, but we're going to go skiing 10 times. I better get going. But it's something, I mean, I know how to ski, but I don't do it. But if I didn't have my friends, there's no way I would go up to ski by myself.
Right.
It's not what I do.
Right. Well, if I was to try to summarize, and I thought that was a wonderful description, I think you you described a journey in fitness quite well through the decades, and maybe again spoke to the female perspective slightly more. But yeah, things I believe when we had the first fitness boom, it in the 70s for the most part, and there was all the aerobics classes and that kind of thing. And it certainly was the ideals around which people were training was for a body which was perhaps not healthy. And then, of course, there was all the running and, that kind of got into even, extreme levels of, ultra distance things. Again, still exists today, of course. I left out the part that you talked about, like the bodybuilding influence, and those were really positives in this evolution. And then ultimately you get to this point where today, I think there's a much greater understanding of do things that fit you, that you love, and be healthy, health first, training is only one thing that we do to create health. It's not really the end in and of itself. You really spoke to that. And then also that we're trying to build these comprehensive, well-rounded human beasts, which are, capable of living long and functioning, performing well in all capacities. So that's what I got from what you said, and I really appreciate that. Where my mind is going now is trying to ask you, as a woman and someone who I think can speak to women's health and fitness quite well, through the lifespan, how does or should one's emphasis in training change? And to frame this up so that it's a clear question, I want to only ask this one question is, when you work with people who are 20 or 30, how does that differ from women who may be perimenopausal, for example, and then also women who are, in later chapters of their life? What are some of the main things that you're seeing? And I just want to leave that to you.
Well, I think when you are in your 20s and 30s, you have a lot of physical ability to do a lot more as far as exercise. You may not have the energy or the time to do it because of family. And if you are going to do it and make the time, you're probably going to be just exhausted, which is fine. You can choose to live your life that way. I know some moms that they're just the best moms ever, and they do live their lives in an exhausted manner, and that they're making that choice. I want to give women a break and say, take it, life is going to continue. One day your little babies are going to leave and they're going to go to college and you're going to have your whole life, and you're just going to sit at home crying for a little while because your life is just different. And then you can go back to it's all about you mostly and your maybe your partner. I think when you get to an age in your mid-40s to like perimenopausal to menopausal, it's so important to stay active as far as symptoms like hot flashes and any, I don't even know what all the symptoms are because I have had some hot flashes, but not very many. And I haven't had a lot of, I knock on wood when I say this, I haven't had a lot of perimenopausal or menopausal symptoms. And I'm pretty much through menopause. I'm an elderly lady. I'm 52, but I feel really good. There's still, I would say this to all women, if you have not reached that point in your life, there's a lot of great things about menopause and getting through menopause if you if you're pretty healthy when you before you get there. You will, just having no menstruation is amazing. It's so fun to not worry and just go on your vacations and you don't have to think about any of that kind of stuff. I feel as far as my appearance that I have, I don't know why, maybe it's because the testosterone is at a higher ratio because the female hormones are lower. I don't know, but I feel like my skin is easier to deal with. And my hair is a disaster, but I don't care. Like I'm at an age where some things I just don't care about. And the older I get, the easier it is for me to just say what I think. And that's always a great thing.
Sure.
I mean, there are times when I should probably not share all of my opinions about everything, but I just do. And I use my age as an excuse. There's a point when you just say it. I can't work out as hard as I used to. I do attend some classes that have tuck jumps and burpees and plyometric lunges. And I still do what I can. I can't jump as high. I shouldn't say I can't. At this moment, I'm unable to jump as high as I would like to. And there are people around me who look like they're on a spring-loaded floor. And sure. I don't feel that at all. I don't know. I think that you keep moving however you can, and life can stay great. It can stay great. It may not get better, but it may. I have friends who have found all of this renewed energy and life as they have, you know, gotten a little bit older. All my friends are 10 years younger than me, but still, I mean, that means they're in their early 40s. And I don't know, life is good. For the older women, I encourage them to keep resistance training. I do think some people move to the pool and they'll do water-based classes, which are excellent, so good for cardio. You need to get some weight-bearing exercise, whether it's a resistance class or whether it's working, even walking on a treadmill. I feel that is super important. Super important the older we get. Aesthetically, when we're young, weightlifting is great, but it's still important aesthetically, but for the reasons that are bigger, like bone health, it's very important to keep that going. So of course I encourage all the women to keep doing that, but especially older women. I don't know. I think that might be my answer.
That was pearl rich.
Well, I don't think that's true.
I do. I mean, thank you so much. Moving right along, let's talk about nutrition or food as a bigger topic.
Okay.
And what I'm interested in is, what are you eating these days? I mean, how do you describe your diet? Because obviously, this is a podcast, not a video, but you are very healthy and your skin is glowing and, you look very fit. And I think a lot of that has to do with nutrition. At least that's what the research says. So what do you do with your fork and knife?
Well, I'm going to have a couple of confessions here. I have a terrible time with sugar. So I do try to cut sugar out of my diet. I eat fruit some. I try not to have too much processed sugar. Mm-hmm. It's a problem for me. If I see a bag of M&Ms, I will eat all of the M&Ms.
Just pound them.
And so you might be thinking a king-size little bag that you buy. No, I'm talking about the five-pound bag at Costco. So I can't have that kind of food around.
Yeah.
The one thing that's helping me with that, because we're all addicted to sugar. It's very addictive.
Yeah, we're Americans.
Right. And it's just the way we're made. Mm-hmm. I don't have it in my house. If it's in my house, I will eat it. I will consume it. So I try to be strict with sugar. And the other side of the sugar coin is it is related to your skin health, to the elasticity of your skin. And as you grow older, your skin just starts to sag, and you just look in the mirror and you think, I need a facelift, and that's going to be $26,000 that I don't have. And so one thing you could do is stop eating sugar. So there's that. And then the other part is day drinking, which I love. And I I try to day drink once a week.
Oh, gosh.
Two drinks. I usually have two mimosas on Saturdays.
Yeah.
But since January, I have just stopped all day drinking, which is, I don't drink at night, but so I'm not drinking, and I kind of love it.
Yep.
I just have a soda water with a splash of fresh squeezed grapefruit juice or something like that, and it's delicious. So those are my confessions. I do struggle with sugar. What I find makes me feel the best is a higher protein diet. And I know there are people who are against protein, who are against animal protein. And I would encourage you to look into the research and be open-minded about it. I would encourage you also, if it is a social issue for you, which I totally agree. We don't need to buy our meat somewhere where we don't know where it came from. I realize everyone does not live in Bozeman, but if you live in Bozeman, there are farms that raise their animals, and they even have Instagram accounts, and you can look at the animals, and they are so loved and well cared for, and you can know right where your meat comes from. Locally grown and locally sourced meat, and also food, just general vegetables are good too. But if that's your deal with meat, you don't have to support the huge farms and buy meat that's corn fed and is not good really for you. The highest quality of meat, of course, is wild game, which is not my favorite, but you can shop locally and get meat that way, and local eggs. So my favorite forms of protein are eggs. I do like hamburger. I should say ground meat. It doesn't have to be beef. It could be buffalo or elk. I'll eat elk burger. And then I do like salad. I usually eat greens in a salad source, and I like to roast vegetables like cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus. I'm not a huge breakfast eater, and I love to hear on this podcast that you acknowledge some people eat breakfast and some people don't. I don't eat it. My sister needs it. If she doesn't eat breakfast, she passes out. Literally. And so, of course, she needs to eat breakfast. I don't. And I do eat fruit. And I will admit that I get my fruit at Costco. It's not local. I do get things at the farmer's market as well. But I do shop at Costco for my fruits and vegetables. And I try not to eat a lot of bread. Bread is another source that's sort of, I know it does break down into sugar, but it's like sugar for me personally, mm-hmm. where if I eat it, I just want to eat more of it, and then I just eat all of it. And so I try to stay away from bread. I don't have any food allergies. I don't have any food sensitivities, really. I just know that I feel the best when I get red meat. and I know it must be the micronutrients that are in it. I joke about my meat needing to be pre-digested because I do not like to see a steak. I don't like to look at it or touch it. I don't like to look at chicken. I don't want to touch it. And when I do make meat, I put usually gloves on to so I don't have to touch the meat. But it is good for you. Like, I know how I feel. I feel best when I eat protein, animal protein. So I try hard to eat whole food and not eat processed food. And it is a choice. I feel for most people in the United States, we get to choose, and we can choose to eat healthy, or we can choose to buy, you know, chips, which I love chips. I would eat chips and salsa every day, but I try not to, because it's not the best.
Well, I mean, this is totally unscripted, and I haven't even seen you in months, but what you really said was you're echo, because you're an intelligent person who studies the research and also listens to her body, you really reflected what the science supports, is that, you know, obviously we have a much greater need for high quality bioavailable protein in the diet than we once thought. And some of the scares about protein are really not substantiated. And in fact, it's well supported that we need more. We can get into numbers if we want, but I've done that on other shows, so we don't have to do it here. I think you also spoke very well about social, moral, ethical concerns, which are valid, and people have those regarding the consumption of animal proteins, knowing that they're more nutritious and bioavailable for humans, but there are issues to be dealt with there for each of us and decisions to be made. And your approach or solution makes a lot of sense to me. Obviously, people live in different places, but these days you can source those same kind of high quality, local grass-fed, grass-finished, depending upon the species we're talking about, meats. You can get them shipped to your door, no matter where you live. And buying in bulk, actually, that's very affordable these days, comparatively. So, big proponent of protein. I heard that message, love it, and I agree with it. Although you're not here for us to agree, we're just here to talk. I also kind of ferreted out, you had some humor in there, but you're pretty smart about the whole junk food thing. And it's like, oh gosh, humans, we're actually wired to crave sweets anyway. It's a survival mechanism, but unfortunately, ancestrally we had the occasional seasonal fruit or honey, not three times a day, these 5-pound bags of M&Ms available. And so that's what our modern problem is. But you've exercised the amount of discipline because you don't like to feel crappy. And it's like, oh gosh, I feel good. And that way your skin looks, it's also representative of your body's tissue health, your collagen. And of course, there's other factors involved, like eating the protein, particularly the glycine-rich component of protein, like that might come in some of the tougher cuts of meat or in bone broth or whatever. And also the avoidance of these seed oils, which are in the junk food that cause us to build inferior cell membranes. So you're doing all those things, and it's obviously manifested in your health and your attitude and everything. So it sounds like you're eating, kind of a low to moderate amount of carbs, and the fats that you're getting are kind of like quote unquote healthy. They're not the seed oils. So that sounds like a great diet. It's working for you. Awesome. Woo! But what do you see? I'm sure there's more than one thing, but in your clientele, what do you see that you know of their food that's the one thing that might be holding them back to better health? I mean, what one thing could people either eat more of or eat less of to make the big gain?
Well, I think that until any one of us is ready to really get real about our diet, I think social drinking, I love drinking. I wish I could drink every day, all day. I know that sounds awful. I know it does.
I love your candor.
The feeling of that. That. But it's not good for us. And I do think drinking is a problem in general in our society, because it's so, you see it on shows, on TV, and it's acceptable. Parents drink at their kids' ball games and they have their coffee cup that's filled with whatever liquor is in there and it's not coffee and whatever. It just seems like it's something that is what we do now. I think that could change for a lot of people. And I think that until you're motivated to look at the science behind sugar, sugar is where most people fail. Or I shouldn't say most, but the women that I talk to about diet, that's where a lot of us have the biggest struggle, whether it's literally sugar in peanut M&Ms or whether it's eating a lot of processed carbohydrates that are just, they just transform into sugar. And you do feel it's, I find it interesting biologically that while I'm eating peanut M&Ms, I feel so, so happy and indeed euphoric and almost, you know, drunk on the sugar of it. But then the next day just have the headache and you have the hangover feel. It's awful. Why would you ever go back? Why would I ever go back and eat more peanut M&Ms? When I see them, all I want to do is eat them.
Even
though I know that I will not feel good the next day, it feels so good right in the moment. I suppose that's probably our biology not catching, like our biology saying, yes, this is good, eat this. And it hasn't quite caught up to, but no, you could get better forms of nutrition here. So I think sugar is a problem and alcohol. I do think those two things are a problem for people. And when you have specific fitness goals, like you're trying to get faster at a race, or maybe you're trying to climb harder, obviously the lighter in body weight up to a point that you are for climbing, the more ascendy, I might say, you're going to be. So eating, you know, eating junk is just not smart. You need to try to eat nutritionally dense food. I don't know. I would say those two things. For me personally, I've struggled with being a vegetarian because I don't prefer meat. I feel better when I eat meat. Mm-hmm. But if I never ate any meat, I do love eggs for protein, which I know is a meat. And I do like the oily, I like salmon and halibut, whatever. But if I didn't ever eat red meat again, I would be happy. But I wouldn't feel as good as I can. When I eat red meat, I don't have to eat much. I could eat once a week or twice a week. I feel so much better. And my muscles recover better. I'm not as sore. Mm-hmm. All of those things. I do struggle personally eating red meat. But generally speaking, if we're speaking about other people than me, I think processed carbohydrates are and alcohol are people's biggest downfalls.
Yeah, and I think that is so prevalent in our culture, in our society, and it's a challenge. I mean, if, based on some people's personality or biology, they actually may need to just do the cold turkey and find a way to be have it be sustainable and just never have those things. But I think for most of us, there's a way that we can, you know, allow ourselves a little bit of leeway, whether that's, let's say it's 10 or 20% of the total diet might have some of these indulgences, and then you don't feel like you're sacrificing. That's probably fine because, again, this durable beast of the human, you know, it really responds mostly to what we're doing the majority of the time. And I think that's, you know, that's an important message that you delivered so well. So I don't have anything to say about that. That wouldn't be redundant or boring. So moving along, I'm respectful of your time, so maybe we'll just hit one or two more topics and finish this up. Tell me about sleep.
Ooh. So when my son was little, I taught him, what is your mom's favorite time of day? Bedtime. Bedtime is your mom's favorite time of day. I used to joke about being really good at sleep, but I didn't realize it's really not a joke because some people struggle to sleep well.
Sure.
For whatever reason, my biology or my body type, if I don't get enough rest, it's no good. And I know it's no good for everyone. Everyone needs good rest. I have found as I've grown older, here's another positive about getting older. I don't need 8 or 9 hours of sleep anymore. I can be fine with 7 hours of sleep. If I get 7 hours of sleep a night, I'm fine. If I can get 6 hours of sleep for a few nights and be fine, but then I'll need to catch up a little bit. I am a huge proponent of getting a good night of sleep. And the recommendations I've heard you give about, screen time is done before you even get into bed, before you're getting ready to go to bed, and to have a nighttime routine, which we could all do. It's just a matter of doing it. It's a matter of making the choice to get in the habit of it. And whatever that is, like, I'm not that great. I'm really good at buying journals. I have a lot of empty ones. I don't do a lot of writing. I just found this one on the floor of my car when I came in here. But I think that might be a good way to end the day. Like, just write something. How did you feel today? How did you whatever? For me, I will, I listen to music, which probably you're not supposed to do. And I sometimes will listen to podcasts, which may not be the best thing to do right before bed. But I try to be in bed by between 9 and 10. I usually get up in the fives. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like, I know sleep is important for everyone. For me personally, it's real, real important.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it sort of fits together well with a lot of the things you emphasize. You know, just going back and just reviewing for my own sake, you really talked about resistance training and its value probably as the most important form of exercise. That's debatable, and I talk about this sometimes as well, but just for, you know, maintaining a good metabolic function and the muscle mass and the bone density. I mean, you definitely got very clear on the value of protein and even the how your body feels when you eat animal protein, and specifically red meat, and the vigilance regarding processed carbs and sugar and alcohol, and when we have that. And now with the sleep thing, really to value it and treasure it and prize it and protect it. And I feel like that's what you were saying there. I would say that this whole idea of having a ritual and sleeping cold and dark to whatever extent one can tolerate, you know, and also just minimizing that the blue light exposure and the screens. Those are the big things. And so when you said, oh, music or podcast or something, that's not necessarily bad if what you're absorbing is relaxing to you. And, you know, and so for some person, it might be like shred metal, probably not. there's PK, you know, he's got like some, you know, new agey techno stuff that he gives me a hard time about, like, that I don't even know anything about. That was on the show recently. But, you know, the point would be, like, if I want to relax, I'll listen to, like, 80s pop music. And some people say that's a little bit too much for them. But for me, it's fine because, you know, if I want to be, you know, more activated, it might be Led Zeppelin or Van Halen or Iron Maiden or something like this, which I wouldn't go to sleep with. But the whole point would be there's room for individual difference. And we don't have to be these automatons, or robots where, let's all swing in this direction because now there's this trend and that trend. And I think the mature message that we get as students of this, you and I, you know, is like, gosh, you know, we don't want to lose our common sense. And sure, we want to have an open mind, but also be a little skeptical. Try not to be biased. Just try to absorb information and make good decisions, but always come back to, well, how do you feel? You know, and that's, you know, the message. I got a good feeling from hanging out with you.
Oh, I get a good feeling from hanging out with you too. I want to talk about for just a second the sleep environment. So we love our bedroom to be as cold as possible. And I think you are the same way. We keep the window open. It's open right now, even though I think it was 18 this morning.
Yeah, which is warm for a January night right now.
Right, it is. Yeah. It is. And my husband has had a little bit of trouble. He has some sleep thing that he has, sleep apnea machine.
Sure, CPAP, yeah.
And but nothing can keep me awake. His snoring didn't keep me awake. And this machine cannot keep me awake. And we keep it dark in our room, and it's just great. I love my house to be much warmer than it probably should be. The bedroom is very cold, and I love to have heavy covers on me. I tend to sleep on my back. I don't toss and turn. I don't know why. I don't think you can change that. Do you? I could, because my husband tosses and turns all over the place, and I fall asleep and I wake up in the same place that I was.
Yeah, well, that's a great topic. There's several topics that you brought up, but like, say, sleep positions. Are they trainable? You know, can we get used to not moving around so much, and that might actually be a part of just getting better quality sleep, you know, sleep cycles, so that we're not waking frequently through the night and shifting. Then the other thing is, yeah, we can train from an orthopedic perspective. Oh, well, you know, if you have certain issues with digestion or breathing, you know, maybe side sleeping would be an option, or, you know, back sleeping for others. And stomach sleeping is actually not so bad for most of the body, except for the neck. You know, it tends to crank the neck, you know, into a little bit of extension and in-range rotation, which isn't a really good place to have your neck for long periods of time. But there are pillow arrangements that one could use. So, you know, I think, yeah, yet as with everything we've been talking about, this theme is like, things are adjustable, and we can get them to be ideal for us, because there's no one definable perfect in many categories, but there's what works for you, what makes you feel good. You know, oh, and that's what I wanted to say. Also, now just jumping around a little bit, just call a little bullshit, you know, not on anything you said, by the way, but on this thing, when you hear people, it makes me cringe, and I hope it does for you too, when they're like, moderation in all things, including moderation.
Yeah,
you
know, no.
This bugs me, and here's why. It's just a misinterpretation of the whole concept of moderation. You know, like, people will say, well, I get a moderate amount of activity today. I walk to the mailbox, you know, which is 100 feet each way. No, that's, do that 100 times. Maybe you're going to get close to getting, you know, your 10,000 steps, and that's debatable whether that's a minimum or not. Okay, yeah, you know, or moderation, all things including moderation. So today I'll eat McDonald's, but I won't eat there. Tomorrow I'll eat Burger King. And Wednesday it's Pizza Hut. It's like, no, come on, it's bullshit. And so, like, do you need a moderate amount of cyanide, lead, mercury, and arsenic? No, you don't. And so there's some things that, I'm getting animated here, that, you know, we just got to have people wake up, you know. And I think I'll stop in a minute, because I want you to be able to respond to this. But it's also the exercise thing where, you know, we've got the person who gets up at 4 a.m. and just hammers, and it's like, well, it's kind of hard, and I'm pushing myself, and it doesn't feel good for my body, but I can get through it, and somehow I feel like I'm a better person for it. Okay, you might have had one win, but you're probably detracting from your health in another way. And then there's the other person's, I don't exercise, it's not for me, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good because you're not in shape at all. And you need to respect your genes and slowly, carefully, safely, happily, with joy, get back into embracing physical culture. So it might be a 6 to 12 month process. Hire a good coach, hire a trainer, like the lady sitting across from me, or work with me, whatever. You know, this whole, people are mixed up sometimes, and I'm speaking from passion and from love. I want to help them, but sometimes they need to wake up.
Yes, I agree with you. I have a mother who is the nicest and loveliest woman, and she has lost, I would say, 4 inches or maybe more of height. Because she's always listening to her body, and if something hurts, which I am the same, I don't like things to hurt, she will stop doing them. And so she has not exercised, and her general daily activity is good. She's up, she cooks, she still cleans her house, she walks with around the neighborhood and gets outside and does all these things. But her inability or lack to want to lift weights, it is affecting her now. And when I see her, she's just little. My mom's always been taller than me. And she doesn't necessarily ascribe to the moderation thing, but That is a line of bullshit. People need to, there is a time and a place to work hard, to push yourself. There's a time and a place to rest and go to bed, sleep, take a break. If your body is sore all the time, you probably need to take a whole day off. A whole day off.
Imagine that.
I know. But moderation and everything, yeah, that's bullshit. You don't need to moderately eat bad food ever. You don't need to moderately, I mean, if you want to drink, that's fine. And if you want to drink moderately, that's fine. You don't ever have to drink one thing of alcohol. You don't have to. There, yes, I 100% agree. There, whatever. We're awful. Humans are the funniest. We just figure out a way to make what we want to think to be right, and then we make it work. And it doesn't. It's not true.
Yeah, that's sometimes I call that rationalization justification. And it's a product of our evolved brains. We're capable of doing that, unfortunately. Of course, the brain's evolved from eating all that animal product. So let's not forget that, folks. But, you know, I think we've got a couple more shows just in what we've been talking about today. So if I haven't offended you and you consider coming back, I'd love to get into some other topics, particularly around health, women's health, fitness in general, life. You just mentioned something about a show about osteopenia, osteoporosis, where we can really, quote some of the literature and also look at what our experience has been working with, at this point, thousands of people in some way or another on that. So I guess in finishing up, I would just say, Ruth, I thank you so much for your time and your wisdom and for sharing that with us. And I really appreciate you.
John, the feeling is mutual. As you know, I would like to say one thing. I know you're wrapping things up. One more thing.
Sure.
When I have had, this is for the audience, when I have had issues with my shoulders, which I have had throughout my life, I have used John as a physical therapist, and he is so good at figuring out the mobility issue and finding the right exercises to do. And I, as you know, you've had thousands of actual clients who come to you for specific reasons. It's great. You cannot go wrong if you're having any thoughts of improving your fitness or of achieving a goal, a fitness goal. And by fitness, in my head, I'm thinking racing. No, just living your life, living your best life. Try it, because it will not hurt. It will not hurt you. You will learn things and get better at life. So I'm not trying to promote, but I sort of am, because I've been able to be a benefactor of your wisdom and what you do. So I appreciate that. So thank you, John. And maybe next time we'll have one more person here too.
Oh yes, and I think there's even a thought that there might be music.
There could be music. Maybe we're going to play some stringed instruments. We'll sing.
I'm thrilled.
It'll be great.
Yeah. So, hey guys, thanks so much for being with us, and don't forget that the Lifetime Athlete is also the home of the Hard to Kill Workshop coming up in Bozeman, Montana, February 29th, where we have a masterclass in kicking ass, and you learn how you can achieve peak performance at any age. Till next time, this is Ruth Kack and Coach Jay-Z signing off from the Lifetime Athlete. Keep rocking.